This is Warrant Officer Flint from G.I. Joe, and you're listening to Storyworthy, and knowing is half the battle.
Hey! Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from St. Ursula's Catholic Church in Allison Park, Pennsylvania.
Woo!
Do you know why, Christine?
Well, I know why, but I will say this. Just as then as I said woo, I thought to myself, you don't really say woo at church. You know what I mean? You might like be like, oh, it's been a pleasant service or something. But you wouldn't it's not like a mosh pit.
I wouldn't know. I never went to church.
You didn't? Ever?
We never went to church, ever.
Oh, my gosh. I was totally forced to go to church, you know, until I was 15.
No, my family was so unreligious that I don't really even know what part of Christianity we aren't a part of.
I see.
I assume we aren't Lutheran. I assume if we weren't Catholic. I've told this story before. I was like trying to talk to my grandma once, and it was like there was a new pope coming up, and I'm like 10, and I go, hey, so you excited about the new pope? And she was like, we are not Catholic.
Whoa.
She was pissed at the idea that she's probably Lutheran because they're from Wisconsin.
Well, the reason why we're coming from St. Ursula's Church in Allison Park, Pennsylvania, is because that's where my parents got married.
That's right.
In 1954.
Wow.
I can't do math, but I know it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. I'm guessing that Allison Park remains pretty much exactly the same, except
you know,
for the addition
really does.
Several
really
fast
is.
Food joints, yeah.
No, I don't even know about that. I haven't gone through Allison Park in 1,000 years. But anyway, tonight, our storyteller, Bill Ratner, he brings forth the topic, my parents' wedding.
Yeah, exactly.
My parents' wedding. And so when I thought about that, my parents' wedding, I knew nothing about it except that I knew they got married on July 3rd, 1954,
right.
But I didn't know.
So you said you called.
So no, I emailed my sisters, four of my sisters, and I didn't bother emailing my brother because I know he won't have this information. But I thought maybe my sisters will know something. And you know what? They know nothing. They knew that they were married on July 3rd. And that's it. And that's all I knew.
Yeah.
So then I called your mom
and
that
got
was
the
smart.
Information.
I should have called her to start with.
Yeah, I know. That would have been a good source to go to, but, you know, fuck that bullshit. She thinks it's a story world. She doesn't know what the hell's going on. But we didn't even know. You know, you're like, yeah, that's where my parents were married. You didn't know until 3 hours ago that's where your parents
were
married.
I knew they were married in that church, and I knew they were married at that day. I'm just saying, like, I didn't know about their wedding day, so I learned that today.
Earlier, you said to me, well, maybe we can, you know, come from where your parents were married. I have no idea. And you refuse to believe that I have absolutely no idea where.
I asked you to break it down to the state. Could you do that? I didn't say the name of the church or the name of the town.
Somewhere in Milwaukee.
Okay, there. So there now we have a state and a
all
town.
All of Milwaukee is holy ground to me, so it's really like all a church.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you this. The Storyworthy Podcast is an official selection in the LA Podfest, which is happening in October this year, 2013, in Santa Monica. And for more information, including the other podcasts that will be there and hotel information, you go to lapodfest.com.
Ooh, that's awesome. And you know what else you want to do? You want to tweet. You want to tweet with us. You want to retweet from us. And by us, I mean you, at Storyworthy. You tweet there. I try to tweet at HannesPH once in a while.
You do now and then. I enjoy the tweeting because to me, it's like wordplay. To me, it's like just making it perfect and the exact amount of characters. And I just like to, I like the call and response. Like yesterday, Patton Oswalt tweeted, quick, the name of your punk band is the color pants you're wearing and the last thing you ate. And then I responded, you know, Black Cox. No, I didn't.
Oh.
I didn't. But I thought of it.
Right.
That's
and
pretty
you,
funny.
Right.
And Bill actually, Radner's pretending not to laugh.
Yeah, it's funny. Technically, it would have been blue black cocks because blue was the pants you were wearing and black cocks was...
You know what's funny about that? That's the thing with Twitter. Like, I didn't think of that response till later because what I did initially is I just wrote back blue fish sticks because I had eaten fish sticks and I was wearing blue jeans. So... That's but then later in the middle of the night, I'm thinking, God damn, I should have said black cock or black cock, like black pants and black cock,
right.
That.
You know how you said you find Twitter to be like, you know, a wordplay? I find Twitter to be a complete fucking waste of my time.
Oh my gosh, Hannes, please. We're trying to build an audience here.
I'll try.
For Christ's sakes.
All you people there who tweet, I don't disrespect you. I don't think that you're wasting your time. I think that it's awesome.
You're exhausting. You're exhausting me.
Yeah, I know.
All right, so I called my mom today. I got some information. I will tell you what she told me. She got married.
I'm very excited about this.
She got married.
I'm going to live tweet while you tell me the story.
She got married at 10 a.m. at St. Ursula's Church, like you said. And that's a Catholic church. So first there was a mass. And then after the mass, they went to dinner at my mother's house. It was small, just for family. And then later in the day, there was a bigger reception at the local fire hall with everybody. Now, keep in mind, my mother was 18 years old. She'd been out of high school for 1 year. She was working as a secretary, but then when she got married, she had to quit. You were not allowed to be married and be a secretary. My father was 21 years old, and he was working in a steel mill there in Pittsburgh called, I think it was called Pittsburgh Iron and Coupling, something like that.
Your father was such a cliche, he worked at a steel mill in Pittsburgh?
You know what, Hannes? That's fucking mean, man. What can I tell you? I'm from fucking Pittsburgh. Well, that's, what does that mean?
That means that's, it's like,
so what?
It's, no, I'm just saying that's like, if I told you my dad worked at the Miller Brewery, you'd be like, well, that's a little on the nose, isn't it?
Oh, I see. Because in Milwaukee?
I don't know.
I'm authentic.
yes, you are authentic.
My mother had a dress on, a wedding dress, they call it, and she told me it was $75, which is actually a good amount of money, I think, in 1954.
Yep, yep.
She had three bridesmaids, June, Ian, and Kitty. Two of those women she never saw again the rest of her life.
That's actually interesting to me.
Well, my mom was saying when she was a little girl, and where she was 18 after she got married, the telephone, you didn't just use the telephone. You picked up the telephone, and a lot of times there were other people on the line. It was like a party line, so then you'd hang up the phone and you'd try another time.
Yeah.
But you couldn't just communicate. Obviously, there wasn't social media that you don't use, Hannes. And there wasn't a way to just communicate.
No, there weren't a lot of cars. I'm well up on the MySpace.
There weren't... Hannes is really cranking the Friendster.
They're actually going to change MySpace to tumbleweeds.com.
Anyway, so my mom said, not a lot of people had cars, or like there was one car per household and that person went to work. And it was interesting talking to her about like one of the reasons why she didn't really have that many friends around. Anyway, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about her wedding. So they were at the fire hall that night, okay? And they're having their fire hall reception. Now, my mom and dad, being 18 and 21 years old, had no honeymoon plans whatsoever.
Wait, I have a question.
What?
I'm sorry. Fire hall. Now, this might be some Pennsylvania. Do you mean at a fire station? What's a fire hall?
A fire hall is like a room. It's very popular back east.
You mean like a ballroom that you rent?
It's not a ballroom, for Christ's sakes. It's a low ceiling, pine wood floor, room that you could rent out or use for a low cost.
Okay.
And it's like where the firemen would have their meals, I think. I'm not really
sure. Okay, right. Well, the fire part is what's confusing me. It's not at the VFW hall.
I mean, we had, yeah, exactly. They were all VFW halls. They were all volunteer. We didn't have where I'm from, we didn't have paid fire departments. I mean, maybe in the city of Pittsburgh, but not in the rural area I was. In where I lived, there was literally a fire siren and it would go off and you would hear it go off. And that means if you were a volunteer, you need to get your ass the fire station because you're going to go out on a trip.
Wow, this is much more interesting than any of the rest of the details. But no, seriously, so you lived in the middle of nowhere in 1850.
That's
okay.
Exactly.
I got it. Okay.
That's good. Now we're on to something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Continue,
so my mom
please.
And dad, while they were at their wedding reception, they decided that they would drive to Lake Erie that night. They would honeymoon in Lake Erie. That's what they decided.
Did they literally decide that day, she said?
While they were at their honeymoon. I mean, at the reception. Okay, so they leave the fire hall, and they start driving to Lake Erie. Or they're going to drive to Lake Erie. But first, they got to go back to my mother's apartment so she can change her clothes and pack a bag. And then my dad's going to go to his apartment, and he's going to pack a bag. So they get to my mother's apartment building, but they realize they didn't have the keys to get in. My mother had forgotten them at the fire hall. So my dad got a ladder from around the side of the apartment building. He climbed up on the roof. Now, the roof of the garage. And he went in through the bathroom window, and then he unlocked the kitchen door. So now then he was on his way back to his apartment to get his clothes to pack for the impromptu honeymoon to Lake Erie. And he was just about to pull out in the car when my mom comes out on the little porch, and she's yelling after him. Jack, wait. Here, this is how she tells it, Hannes.
Yeah.
Okay? She couldn't get her wedding dress off because it had all these tiny little buttons up the back, like dozens and dozens of buttons. So she had to say, Jack, come back. You have to unbutton the buttons on my dress. And then she claims he left immediately after that and went back to pack his clothes. Do you believe her?
That he he undid her and then walked away?
That's right.
On their wedding day.
Yeah.
That is hard to believe.
Hard to believe.
Especially since supposedly they were also Catholic and hadn't had sex yet.
So my mom says he left right away. Then he comes back a short while later.
Now that's your mom saying that they had sex before the marriage to me.
No, no. They've already been married. This is the night of the wedding. This is the wedding night. The topic tonight, Hannes, is my parents' wedding.
No, I know that. But you're saying if a, if a man is just married a woman, he's never had sex with her.
Right.
He takes off her wedding dress.
Right.
It doesn't have sex with her immediately.
Right.
I'm sorry to tell you, that means he had sex with her at some point in the past. Enough times that he's like, whatever.
You are filthy. You are a filthy,
good thing your mother will
man.
Never hear this because she's looking at storyworld.com right now going, I don't understand. So, it's all about globes.
So she says a couple of weeks or a couple of hours go by. He comes back. And now my mom had changed into her new dress that she bought for the occasion of her honeymoon. She was holding her small suitcase, and in her suitcase, she had five dresses. She only owned five dresses. She told me her mother had bought all the five dresses for her for high school graduation, one to wear each day when she worked as a secretary at the glass factory. So now
with
she's
Don
wearing...
With Don Draper?
That's exactly right. Yep. Now she's wearing a new... You know, I was thinking about that, Hannes. This is 1954. This is like Happy Days. This is like Marion Ross and Tom Bosley. You know what I mean?
This is before. Yeah, this is...
My mother said that would you go to the guidance counselor when she was in high school, and she went to the guidance counselor, they said, do you want to be a nurse, a secretary, or a housewife? They had three choices.
Right.
My mother said housewife. I think she said secretary. Then she had to be a housewife. Anyway, so she was wearing a new dress that she had bought for the honeymoon. She said it was a gray dress trimmed in red with red accessories. Red high heels. Hello. A red basket purse. Red gloves. A red belt. And along with that dress and her suitcase with the five other dresses, she was ready for her honeymoon. Now, my mom and dad, they were kids, and they had not thought this trip out. First of all, it was the 4th of July weekend, and everything was booked. So there was nowhere to stay in Lake Erie. So they had to push on and keep going. They finally stopped in Dunkirk, New York, where they saw a bar that said rooms for rent. My dad went in to find the office while my mom waited in the car. It was $6 for the night. And they only needed it for overnight because they'd be on their way in the morning. To push on, they decided to go to, because they were past Erie. So what's next?
Hell?
Niagara Falls.
Niagara
exactly.
Falls.
Exactly. So
slowly I turn.
So they take
step
the,
by
they
step.
Take their
Bill
two small suitcases
this.
Out of the car and they find the room. It's at the top of the stairs. It's facing the front of the street, and the lights from the bar are flashing through the windows. And it was one of the first times, my mom said, that either had of them had ever been away from their families or home, or you know, away from their home overnight in Pittsburgh. And here they were in Dunkirk, New York, above a bar on their wedding night. They left in the morning for Niagara Falls.
By the way,
Falls.
It sounds like they spent their wedding night in a film noir.
Yeah, I know,
I was expecting,
right?
Like Fred McMurray to kill somebody right outside the window.
So they went to Niagara Falls the next day. Again, they had no reservations, but they finally found this little motel called the Rainbow Motel. And once again, they carried in their two small suitcases, and they stayed the week. Now, my mom said she never wore that gray dress again because she realized that housewives don't wear dresses. Only secretaries do. And when they got back to Pittsburgh, they got a two-bedroom apartment in Aspinwall. Now, my oldest sister, Lauren, was born the very next year, 1955. And then within the next 10 years, my mom had five more kids. So she was 30 years old with six kids under the age of 10. Jesus Christ.
Oy, gewalt. That is quite... all that tale. And it's just, yeah. So wait, I'm going to go back to the wedding dress. So you're saying your mother today said to you, listen, took off my wedding dress and then went away to tell you that they didn't have sex then? Was that the implication? I'm confused.
Yes, she was saying that, because I said, but let me get this straight, because I went back to it. I said, after he unbuttoned all those buttons and however long that took, you know, then he just left. And she said, yes, he left immediately.
Now, so your mother is so Catholic that she won't even give up having sex with her husband on her wedding day.
I don't know. They had to get in the car. They had to push on to Erie. I don't know.
Yeah, no one ever had sex in a car in 1954. You know how big those fucking cars were? It was like a whole bedroom set in the back. There was a two-bedroom apartment in the back seat. The trunk was a garage you could put another car in. That's how big the car is. By the way, I do have one piece of information.
What?
I don't know. My mother was married three times. Never knew about the first husband. She married a guy, when she was 19, she married a guy who was like 33, who was from her old town, but had already moved to Milwaukee and started a bakery. Speaking of cliches. she married him basically to get out of post-war Germany, which was a complete, you know, economic depression disaster.
Of course.
Then she's in Milwaukee. She brings over her brother. He meets my dad working at Remington Shavers. Wow, it's really is sounding very Mad Men, isn't it? And that's how she meets my dad. So they got, anyhow. So then her third marriage was to a guy she knew when she was 7 years old back in her hometown of Bad Harzburg, and she had moved back there. So she got married in Germany for the third time, I know this, on April 15th, 1987.
Okay, that was the third time.
That was the third time. Do you know why I remember that date?
Because it's tax day?
Because it's the one and only no-hitter in Milwaukee Brewer history. So I was sitting there saying to my friend Mark Augustine, that you've met. I was like, hey, you know what? My mom's getting married in Germany right now. So he's like, well, congratulations. And we're watching the baseball game, and it's a no-hitter. I was like, oh, this is kind of neat.
Why weren't you at her wedding?
Because
it was back in Germany.
She was already in her 60s. It was in okay. Germany.
Okay, well, I'm saying is today I said to you, do you know anything about your parents' wedding? You knew nothing. And now all of a sudden you know about three of your mom's weddings.
I don't know.
You do have information.
I have no idea. That I just gave you all my information.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank God we have a real storyteller here.
I know. This is just what a fucking disaster.
All right, you guys.
We're in a ditch on the side of the road. The car is on fire.
Oh, I did want to mention this. Folks, if you like the Storyworthy podcast, and obviously you do because you're listening, here's what you need to do. You need to tell a friend. You know what I mean? Or your brother or your sister. And then they listen, right? And yes. Now we have
two people listening.
Exactly. And then what happens?
We have four people listening.
And then I have very
eventually
clean
there will
hair.
Be 20 to 25 people listening around
Fabergé
the world.
And I use Fabergé organic shampoo.
Right, exactly.
And we're all listening to Storyworthy.
Yes. And also you can just give us money, by the way. You know what? We don't care.
I don't mind.
Just go to the website and click donate. And give us some money.
That's nice. I like when people do that. I get a notice and it really lifts my day up. You can imagine.
Yeah, exactly. So somebody out there somewhere right now is on a chaise lounge by their pool thinking these pathetic bastards. Perhaps I could give them $10.
That would be very nice. Because we want to keep the programming coming. You know, we don't want to stop the train. We want to keep the train moving.
Oddly enough, this is not a money machine. I know you think we're sitting here in our silk robes doing the
Hannes
podcast.
Is fucking a model on a pile of money. You know how it is.
Well, sure. It's a model train. But still, I'm fucking a model train on a pile of Monopoly money. But it's important that I keep the dream alive.
Stay tuned because Bill Ratner is on his way here. Shotgun Storyworthy, the celebrity edition, is coming.
Thursday, May 16th at Cafe Fado Do in Mid-City, Los Angeles at 8 p.m. This event is free.
That's exactly right. Now, there are five celebrities that will spin the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tell a true 7 to 10 minute story.
7 to 10 minutes? That's new and exciting.
It sure is. The celebrities include actor Toby Huss, comedians Blaine Kapach and Kathy Ladman, and writer Annabelle Gurwitch. The judges are comic Rick Overton and Carrie Armstrong from The Moth LA.
Plus, we have singer-songwriter Allie Gertz opening the show with her nerdy love songs at 7:30.
I love me some Allie Gertz. All right, you guys, remember, the event is free, so come on down.
Go to shotgunstoryworthy.com or visit our Storyworthy Facebook page for more information. We're back. We have left St. Ursula's Church, and we have traveled to the Niagara Rainbow Motel in Niagara Falls because we want to witness further information about. As a matter of fact, there is a plaque on the wall that says, here is the place that Christine's parents consummated their marriage.
Listen,
I don't know why they refer to it as Christine's parents because you weren't born when the plaque was put up.
And not only
that. But you know, Ashton Kutcher, again, perhaps in some sort of time-space continuum, could explain this.
You weren't listening, man. They consummated the marriage in Dunkirk, New York, above that bar. You weren't listening, Hannes. anyway.
Oh, I was right. I got mixed
up. You haven't been to Niagara Falls?
I've never been in Niagara
Falls. My brother
falls.
Goes up there. He says it's a laugh. I don't know what they do. I don't know. It's
I
like...
can only imagine you look at the falls, which I think I want to do
once. And then
you, once.
Take the, you take the maiden of the mist or the maid of the mist, and you go in this boat and you wear a raincoat and you take pictures under the falling water. And then if you're lucky, somebody jumps over the falls or they're in a barrel or something like that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, when was that great entertainment?
What?
Guy went over the falls in a barrel. That
yeah,
used
no,
to be
was,
the biggest thing
like
to happen all
70s.
Year.
It was like the, around the Evel Knievel times. It was
oh,
like
I thought it was like
Evel,
the 1870s when
no,
that
no,
started.
No, no, no. It was like Evel Knievel in Snake River Canyon and then people going over Niagara Falls. It was very big in the 70s, I think. All right, you guys, Bill Ratner's here, thank God. And he is an 8-time winner of the Moth Story Slams here in Los Angeles, and he's also performed at the National Storytelling Festival Slam in Jonesboro, Tennessee. Now, he was selected the best of the Hollywood Fringe Festival here in Hollywood in 2012, and he's got a new live solo show called Bobby Wood about his uncle who played Bobby the Bellboy in I Love Lucy, and that plays again at the Hollywood Fringe Festival here now in Los Angeles in June 2013. You can find more about Bill Ratner at BillRatner.com. You can find more about the Hollywood Fringe Festival at HollywoodFringe.org, and you can find a lot more out about Bill Ratner at BillRatner.com. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are, put your hands together for Bill Ratner.
Thank you. So you guys had me locked in the closet so I wouldn't make any noise, but I was overhearing everything you said about your parents' wedding. It was very, very sweet. And this is what my story is about. I was just in Chicago visiting my 99-year-old uncle, who is my dad's little brother. And being 99, oh, by the way, he lives in Oprah's building near North Side of Chicago, near Water Tower. And I know that it's still Oprah's building. He, I mean, he mentioned this, but, you know, who knows? She could have moved to Wyoming for all I know. But she still lives there because I was in the health club shaving in the sub-basement. And next to me was Stedman. And I really wanted to ask him, are you guys like, you know, or is this just like for the public? And he was like 6'5", very impressive in a towel. And so I didn't say anything. I just sort of, you know, sort of thought, hey, I can talk about Stedman and Oprah. So my uncle lives in Oprah's building. And being 99, I mean, he's in great shape. I mean, he's not going to die until for like 6 or 7 years. And, B99, his short-term memory is kind of shot, but his long-term memory is incredible. So he tells stories about my parents and his mother and so on and people I never even met, and he tells them over and over. And but for me, it's a bonanza because, I mean, I was not around at my parents' wedding. This was in 1938. But he tells me that my dad brought my mother to be home. To the cigar store at 44th and South Kedzie Avenue on the south side of Chicago, where the floor is covered with sawdust and kosher dill pickles in a barrel in the corner. And he goes, Ma, this is Dolly. Dolly, meet my Ma. And she, you know, grabs her face. Oh, look at this point. What a gorgeous little girl. Where'd you get that curly brown hair? Are you Jewish? And he goes, Ma, Dolly's not Jewish. She's Episcopalian. Episcopalian? Like the Queen of England. And then my mom to be takes my grandma to be's hand and says, you know, Mrs. Ratner, it's such a pleasure to meet you. I love your son and, you know, Jew, Episcopalian, it doesn't matter. It's what's in the heart that counts. And this is going to be my family's first mixed marriage. And my grandmother says, yeah, mixed up is more like it. Who's going to marry you, a rabbi? And then she says, one day, you're going to take the grandchild that maybe you and Julius will make for me into a temple. And the rabbi will say, so, grandchild of Sarah, are you a Jew? And he'll say, not really. I'm just Jewish. No, thank you. You don't need me at this wedding. And my dad says, what do you mean? Mom, of course you have to come to our wedding. And my mother-to-be said, we want you at our wedding. And she goes, it's all right. Go marry the rich girl, eat Wonder Bread. I'll stay home and sit in the dark. And my dad, why are you saying this? Because I don't have the right dress. She said that. This is her whole obsession with, you know, because they're marrying out of the ghetto where people wear really expensive clothes that she can't afford. I don't have the right dress. And he goes, we'll buy you the right dress.
And she goes, mm-hmm. And a nice pair of shoes? Sure, Mom. And a hat and a coat? Of course. And where are you going to get this kind of money? You're going to join up with Al Capone and be a gangster with a Tommy gun? Go marry this girl. You're not even going to be Jewish anymore. And so my dad says, we're not religious, Mom. I mean, you keep the cigar store open on the Jewish holidays. And she goes, I do not. Ma, last month was Passover. I had to stand by the front door, and every time a Jewish family would walk by on the way to temple, I had to warn you, Ma, here come the Jews. Turn the lights out. And she said, well, it's a shanda to keep the store open during the holidays. He said, yeah, but the minute they'd go by, I'd turn the lights back on. So we need the business. So at that point, her sister-in-law walks in and immediately walks up to Dolly, the young bride-to-be. Oh, this is the beautiful. I'm Sarah's sister-in-law, Esther. You're so beautiful. And she turns to my grandmother. Sarah, have you bought a dress for the wedding? If you haven't, I'm taking you to Marshall Fields. We're going to buy a very fancy gown. You're fancy schmancy. I don't need no gown. I need customers. Who's going to man the store if I don't stay here? No, I'm not going. And my dad says, you know, you're being so selfish. Just selfish. 18 months. No, not 18 months. That would be an elephant. 18 hours I spent in labor with you. I nursed you. I clothed you. I bought you a violin. Ma, you broke that violin over my head. Because you wouldn't practice. So after all this conversation, she gets in a streetcar with her sister-in-law. They go to Marshall Fields. They buy her a beautiful gown and shoes and hat and coat. And the next day is the day of the wedding, and it's a beautiful day with big puffy clouds floating over Lake Michigan, maybe even over Milwaukee too, Hannes, where it was probably raining. And my great aunt, Esther, wheels up with her husband, Hyman, to the front of the cigar store in a brand new 1938 Chrysler Imperial. And Sarah, my grandmother, looks at this and goes, Hyman, you want me to go riding in this? And he sticks his head out the driver's side window and says, Sarah, you want me to pick you up in a vegetable truck? She says, I want you to just shut up, Hyman. And then she screams for her kids, Gerald, Anna, Julius, get your tuchuses out here into the royal carriage. We're going to a wedding. And my uncle and my dad come out in tuxedos, and my aunt in a bridesmaid gown, and my grandmother in her beautiful Marshall Fields dress. And they get into the Imperial. My great uncle lights a big black cigar. They drive north on Lakeshore Drive. It's 29 miles to Glencoe, Illinois, which is where my mother-to-be lives. Fancy northern suburb near Evanston. Time enough for my grandmother to be freaking out. She's adjusting her stockings and pulling at her girdle. And my dad goes, Ma, calm down. You're making us nuts. I can't get this dress to sit right. Ma, look. We're there.
We're where?
We're in the wilderness. Ma, behind the trees. That's Dolly's house. That's where I'm getting married. And she stares at this house, which is a lovely three-story red brick colonial with dormer windows and French doors framed by forest green shutters and a big screen porch with full of flowers. And she stares at it and she goes, I could fit 10 cigar stores inside that place. So they walk across the lawn and caterers and flower arrangers are setting up tables and chairs, and framed in the doorway of the house is a big barrel-chested older man in an elegant black tuxedo. And he runs out, and he ignores everybody else in the group, and he claps my dad on the shoulder and says, Julius, how are you? You look fabulous in that tuxedo. Am I paying for that damn thing? And my dad's mother, standing behind him, I certainly hope you are. And so the man turns around, happens to be Dolly's father, my grandfather, Oscar James West III, and he says to my grandmother, Madam, would you be so kind as to get us something to drink, perhaps some lemonade with a splash of gin in it? Go along now. And her eyes open wide, and my dad looks embarrassed, and he goes, Oscar, this is my mother, and Ma, this is Dolly's dad, Oscar James West. And he Oh, I'm so, Sarah, oh, goodness gracious, I learned my manners in a riding stable. I'm so sorry, I thought you were the maid. And he takes her arm and escorts her into his big house. And she looks around like this is an exhibit at the Chicago Art Institute. And she says, this is all very nice, lots of beige. Do you own or do you rent? Well, this my father built this house, Sarah, and I was born here. My daughters were born here. Lots of living done here. Let's have some lemonade. And she says, never touch this stuff. It rots the teeth. And he looks at her and he says, so you're Sarah, mother of the groom. You look wonderful in all that accoutrement, linen, and lace. Well, the ceremony is about to begin. It's being officiated by a Unitarian minister. And my grandmother escorts my dad down the aisle, and my grandfather, my mother, and they sit down together. And he leans into her and says, Sarah, what's that big blanket they're holding up with those sticks? And she says, this is not a blanket. It's a chuppah. It's a Jewish tradition. It represents the house that Julius and Dolly are going to have one day. Oh, that's fascinating. What are they doing now? The Unitarian minister had wrapped a glass in a napkin and put it at their feet, and they stomp on it, and the minister says, just as this glass shall break, so shall the union never break. And she said, that's another tradition, Oscar. And she yells, Mazel Tov! And he goes, what was that? It's Jewish for congratulations. Mazel Tov! Wonderful! Sarah, this is absolutely fascinating. This kind of wedding is much more fun. Episcopalians usually just stand around and suffer. Well, we do that ourselves, Oscar. So the wedding's over. They go to the tables. They sit down. A beautiful, sumptuous meal is served. And Oscar follows Sarah and sits down at the bridal table next to her. And he says, Sarah, I'm an old widower. And you're the most exotic thing that's walked into my life in a long time. And I'm wondering if there's any chance that I could call you. And she says, call me. Call me what? On the telephone, dear. Oh. We have a telephone at the store. You know, the customers use it. They put a nickel in the cup. It adds up. So it's a date then? I don't have the right dress. My dad says, Ma, we'll buy you the right dress. And she looks at Oscar and says, oh, well, this could be very expensive.
You are the master, man. You are so good at storytelling. Really, have you always been able to do...
I came out of my mother's womb explaining to the anesthesiologist what it was really like to get high.
Oh, man.
You know? Yeah.
No, but you don't
I can just see a tiny baby like, hello.
But a lot of times...
am a tiny baby.
A lot of our guests have scripts. You know, they read from a script. I read all the time from a story from the script. And you did not. You had no paper in front of you. And you just start going off on these voices.
Well, I did this the last two weekends. I've been on the road.
Yeah, tell me, yeah.
At the Portland, Oregon Storytelling Festival.
And
the Northland Storytelling Conference in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin.
No Woo! Kidding.
Right how, Lake Geneva, home how of the first they? Playboy club in the world.
Yeah.
And what were they both like?
Well, they're fun. Portland, Oregon has been throwing a beautiful storytelling festival every spring for like 13 years.
That was just the Bridgetown Comedy Festival was just there. Was it the same time?
I don't know.
Oh,
maybe.
Okay.
It was 2 weeks ago.
Okay, yeah. And so then, and so how many storytellers were up there?
They hired like five of us, and we go from library to library to library, and then it's at a school the last night and a big concert. And
that sounds like a lot of fun. You must enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, in the Northlands, what was that like?
Northlands is a conference where each of us that gets hired teaches a workshop and then tells a story, and then they bring in the big old masters and they tell stories.
Is it good? Are they good? Is it very stylized? Because there was a
Southern guy named Andy Offit Irwin who's really, really funny. I mean, he's like George Carlin, you know, from the South.
Right.
Yeah. And there was a guy named Sid Lieberman who, you know, is like Milton Berle, only smaller. I mean, these are pros. And they're on the storytelling circuit, which is kind of a parallel universe.
And has the storytelling circuit always been around? I mean, I know
it's been around since like 1974.
Okay.
I mean, before that, they're really people told stories in school. And
so there's comedy that, you know, comedians that tell stories, and there's all sorts of different storytelling, but it just seems like recently, goddamn storytelling.
Yeah,
it became
a thing. Well, yeah, if it wasn't for Storyworthy, none of this would have happened. This is what I think we're
that's
saying.
That's right. Storyworthy is responsible.
That's created a whole renaissance.
First, there were people telling stories around a campfire, and then there was the Storyworthy podcast.
Right.
That's
every one of these people, like the Marines, they had like a little pin, Storyworthy pin, and there's a wonderful ritual. They just pound it into their chest.
Yes, that's exactly then, right. Yeah. They feel a little pain, a little pleasure at the same time.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. What we like to do is attach a whip to the Storyworthy wheel, a shotgun wheel of truth, and spin it, and then you whip yourself, but it's really
that's
like God's doing it.
Coming to your show.
By the way, this has nothing to do with anything, but I have to show you this incredible photograph of a 1938 Chrysler Imperial.
White
found.
Wall tires.
Look at this
fenders
beautiful thing.
That wouldn't quit.
And I know what you're thinking. And a picture. It's podcast gold.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. No, and what are you showing a picture of, Hannes? Explain it, man.
It's the 1938 Chrysler Imperial. It is one of the most beautiful black long cars with the white walls and the
really
side.
Really long.
And the side. What is these things called? The foot
running boards.
Running boards where you could stand on the side. Like you could pack six people in, and if you need more people, they would just hang onto the side of the car while you drove down the highway.
And jump seats in the back, like the back, checker cabs used to have, where they'd fold up and you
sit
instead
down
and
of a trunk,
three more people.
It opens up and it's a...
What year was the wedding? I don't,
38.
In 1938. Okay. Yeah. Wow. And how old were your folks?
They were 12 and 13.
Is that right? That's
no, I mean, my dad graduated college. They were like 25 and 26. They were born in like 1909, 1910.
But it's interesting, though. They were academics then.
For
that time.
Yeah, they were academics, and my dad became an advertising guy.
Right. You know, it's also funny to me.
He used to hire actors because they had nice hands. He would have them hold Betty Crocker cake mixes.
You know, honestly, that's always my downfall at auditions because I have really big hands. I have my father's hands and I have really big knuckles. And if they say hands, please, and you have to turn your hands frontwards and backwards, I always try to do it like really lightly. Like I'm just like flip, flip. And they always go, please spread your fingers apart. And then I'm like, okay, here they are.
He said that.
And I'm not going to get the job.
He said that to me once when because he told me my uncle was an actor. My uncle was Bobby the Bellboy and I Love Lucy.
Right.
And I said, actor, what do you mean? I was really little. I said, what does an actor do? And he says, an actor is somebody with nice hands.
Oh, God damn, man. And that, I said, maybe that's why I'm podcasting and I don't have a show.
Podcasters are actors with big hands.
Oh, see, my hands are perfect for radio.
See, no, but what it made me think of is similar. We were talking about religion a little bit and not knowing. It's like, we have this impression that everybody before like 1950 like went to church and synagogue every day and the whole world was very religious and people, oh, America's religious. And it's like, it was 1938, your great-grandmother did not, or your grandmother did not go to synagogue all the time.
No,
she kept it open.
Absolutely not.
The other guy's an Episcopalian. He's got a Unitarian.
To my uncle, is what he said at the wedding. He said that when he gave a toast to my mother and father and people who were there, a bunch of immigrants and a bunch of rich people from the north side, right? He said, Jew, Episcopalian, Unitarian, make up your goddamn mind. Whatever you are, here's to you.
Wow. Yeah.
That's
awesome,
a Unitarian right there. Yeah.
Well,
that's
it's interesting, though, because you come from obviously an artistic background as well. It seems, right? Like my parents didn't, they were so poor. They don't even think they had it. They didn't know they could even be artistic. You know what I mean? It was like work in the mill. Do what you do, be a secretary. Well, and that it was just, I guess I was just a different.
My dad worked in advertising. Advertising agencies are cool places. I mean, it's a big agency in Minneapolis.
It's very creative, isn't it?
And they have, you know, people doing airbrushing and all the announcers are there and musicians. And so, you know, selling their souls to the devil by the dozens.
Right. I was listening to your story.
God, I want to sell my soul to the devil. Somebody make me a fucking offer.
Buy me.
Buck and a half, Hannes. Buck and a half. I was listening to your story, and you were talking about, you know, it was your grandmother who was having the hard time, but she paid for the wedding?
No, God, no.
Wait, who paid for the wedding?
The father, the mother.
Okay, because whoever pays for the wedding really does have the biggest chunk of investment. You know,
was at his house, yeah.
They're going to make the most choices. They're going to get the bottom line.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why they got
The grandma didn't have a pot to piss in. I mean, she had a kosher dill pickle barrel to piss in, but... Didn't have a pond to piss in.
But I mean, that's
why.
Which
is, by the way, the difference between kosher and non-kosher pickles.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
They were able to have the broken glass, and they were able to have the.
They did it all.
A hoopah.
And I actually Googled the house, Google mapped the house, because my aunt had given me this album with the address of where this house was built in, like 1898.
Right.
I went onto Google Maps and 780 Glencoe, Illinois. And there it was. The house is still there.
Wow, that's awesome, man.
Nice, big, beautiful lot. So, yeah.
Hey, listen, would you like to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Yeah.
can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Woo!
And although these are categories are spinning by, one is self-love, one is self-loathing, one is self-dressing, one is how to powder a baby, and this is prom. Oh, man. So I only went to one prom. I didn't go in sophomore year. And junior year, I asked the homecoming queen, who was a senior, out. I just thought, you know, ask for what you want. She wouldn't go, of course. She was very nice. Margaret Swenson. If you're listening, I still love you, baby. But she said no. She had a boyfriend. It was a homecoming king, right? So I didn't go. My friends and I went out and, you know, got drunk or whatever. But senior year, I did go because I had a girlfriend who was a sophomore.
Yeah.
Margene, somebody or other. I don't remember her name. Margene, if you're listening, I apologize. You probably have a different name anyway. You may not remember your name. So we go to the prom, and then my friend Bruce Berglund says, let's go outside and get drunk. So we went into the woods. I left my date, Margene. She has a bottle of cheap vodka. He poured it into a glass of 7-Up. He said, hold your nose. The vodka's really bad. We drink. We go back in. I dance. I get in her car, and I lose my lunch and my dinner and the snacks in the back of the seat. And that was my prom night.
So you didn't get in her pants that night.
I may have gotten some on her pants, but certainly not.
That is so damn gross.
You know what I love? I love, just like the other story, what it illustrates is nothing ever changes.
Yeah, it's so true.
That happened last year to some kid at a prom. It happened to you. It probably happened to your father.
It happened to me last week.
I mean, I was going to say, what do you mean last year at a prom? I mean, it happens every day. People, you drink too much. You're not thinking. You start puking, and it ruins the whole goddamn day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's alcohol poisoning without the death.
Well, we talked about alcohol poisoning recently on the show, and we had this big argument about how much blood is in our body. And I honestly thought it was like 8 gallons. And I'm like, that can't be.
No, then I looked it up and it was like 5 quarts.
The point is, and I don't know how much that is. If you drink 7 or 8 beers, just think about that amount of liquid.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you have 1.5 gallons of blood. So we have the blood is on this side and the alcohol is on this side. I mean, just by volume.
You can show your kid. I mean, you can take a shot glass and the kids are shocked, like 16, 17-year-old kids, at how little it would take to A, get you drunk, and B, kill you. But I did that. I showed my daughter. I said, this is a shot glass. It's an ounce of alcohol, blah, blah, blah. But this is me as a grown man talking.
Right.
And last year I was at a dinner with at the end of the table where the people were quite boring. So I just kept drinking.
Sure.
So, well, what am I going to do? And fortunately, the restaurant, it was this guy was very, very clean, and he had these little stalls with like Mexican tile. Mm-hmm. And I gave him $20 and I said, that's why they call it a restroom. I'm going to rest.
Oh, my gosh.
So I wrapped myself around a very clean toilet and slept for about 45 minutes.
Were you puking,
too? No.
I'm just
sleeping, passed out. And then I woke up. My body had burned off the alcohol. I got up and joined the party. And they said, where were you? And I said, I was in the restroom. Resting.
Yeah. Are you one of those kind of people that has like a bar at home? Do you have like a bar?
No, I have a shelf with alcohol. I actually don't drink.
A lot of people have enough alcohol in their bar to choke a horse. I mean,
I don't know. I don't have bars. This is not my thing. Bar is an icon. Is like a, you know, this thing that you worship. I don't have one. I worship.
Yeah,
I only ever have.
I have like beer and wine. Hannes, do you ever have like a bar at your house? Like
never.
Like,
no.
Me neither. There's so many. You'd have to have so many bottles.
Well, I have a lot of bottles, but they're on a shelf.
Oh, you do. I see.
Yeah.
Are they
top
shelf?
I never understand that because you see that especially in old movies and old TV shows where the guy's like, well, you want me to mix you a Chrysler Imperial with a, you know, I don't know what the fuck. You know?
I know how to add ice. I mean, I just want to get high, that's all.
But it's like decanters of brandy and scotch.
No, they got,
around.
They got brandy, whiskey, gin, and vermouth and vodka. And it's like, I think you drink one of those things. You're a whiskey drinker, you're a vodka drinker. I don't think anybody drinks both of those.
You know, they want to be able to offer it to their guests.
Yeah, I guess.
They say that the reason the guys in the backpack lasted so long is because they drank really expensive booze.
Huh.
And I thought, this is stupid, because bourbon, I always thought, was the most horrible tasting drink in
it
the
really
world.
It really is bad.
And until a friend of mine had like an $80 bottle of bourbon.
Oh, I see.
And it was the greatest thing.
You know what I felt?
I'm drunk
I had,
right now.
I had that experience with a Patron, Silver Patron, that tequila. And I'm not a big tequila drinker, but I'll tell you something. If I had a bottle of Silver Patron, and I think it's upward of $50 or $60, I wouldn't go putting it in a decanter. You know what I mean? I'd keep it in that bottle.
That's why you have to play the lottery, so that ultimately one day you win and you'll be able to buy whatever you
want.
Well,
you've heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Play the lottery, says Bill Ratner.
Yes. Hey, this is your financial plan.
Support the state.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. I do want to say congratulations on getting into the Fringe Festival again.
Thank you.
That's a great thing.
This is fun. This is about my Uncle Bobby. You mentioned the Danny Thomas Radio Hour.
Yes, I did mention that earlier, and but you said your uncle.
The only thing I knew about my uncle, my parents refused to let me meet my Uncle Bobby, who played Bobby the Bellboy in I Love Lucy.
Knock, knock, Mrs. Ricardo, it's Bobby. I got that pretty green ballroom gown here. It's all nice and dry clean for you.
He was on the Hollywood episodes.
Right.
But when we wanted to meet him, my brother and I said, no, you don't. He's an actor. Well, what's wrong with it? You don't know. Forget
so
it.
So he's like an alcoholic or something?
We didn't know. And then I grew up and moved to California. I'm going to go meet my uncle. And I did. And what I met was someone who I didn't expect. And in order to find out who it was I met, you have to come see Bobby Wood
dun, dun,
at the Hollywood Fringe Festival, HFF13.org.
Listen, I came and saw you in it last year, and you're really talented, Bill. You're always so fun to listen to. And you're a good kind of storytelling. I mean, I'm just saying, there's storytelling, and then there's like the Garrison Keillor, and I know you like that, Hannes, the Garrison. I don't really care for that. I like a more snappy storyteller, and I think that's what you are.
Thank you.
Snappy.
Thank you. Yes.
I prefer a storyteller that makes me look like I have energy.
Ladies and gentlemen.
And that's what Garrison Keillor does.
That's
it's
almost
much like
impossible.
Sherry and I have been attending a lot of live musical theater, and that's a good way to feel young.
Yeah,
because the night that you come, I will take hydroquinone so that it'll look make.
What is that? What is that?
Hydroquinone, I believe.
Yeah, no, Hannes is like
Vitamin
what are you? 51 now? 52?
I'm 112.
75, something like that. Hannes is always in his mid-70s, really, maybe mid-60s.
No. I think 75 is the new 65.
That's what I've heard. And 80 is the new dead. No, dead is the new 80. Something like that.
Yes.
All right, you guys, we're going to wrap this up right now. I'd like to thank Jorge Reyes. He's our sound engineer. And, of course, John Thomas Griffith. He wrote the theme song Follow Me. You know that guy?
I guess so. I've heard of him
somewhere. And, of course, on behalf of our storyteller, Bill Ratner.
Thank you,
friend. And you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.